From NPR News, this is special coverage of Super Tuesday. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. At this hour, we are still waiting on results from the key battleground today, Ohio. It will go to either Mitt Romney or Rick Santorum, along with a chunk of delegates and bragging rights.
The Associated Press has called Virginia, Vermont, and Massachusetts for Mitt Romney. The AP projects Tennessee goes to Rick Santorum, and Newt Gingrich takes Georgia. He spoke recently to his supporters in Atlanta.
So, as Calista said, tomorrow will bring another chapter in the race for the nomination. But it's more than a chapter in the race for the nomination. It's a chapter in a fight for the soul of the Republican Party. It's a chapter in the fight for the very nature of America. It's a chapter in defining who we are as a people.
That's Newt Gingrich speaking to his supporters in Georgia. We're going now to Tennessee and to Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn, who represents the state's 7th congressional district. Congresswoman Blackburn, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
And the Associated Press has called your home state for Rick Santorum. What's your analysis of how Rick Santorum did in Tennessee today?
Well, obviously, he did very well. And, of course, he had had a significant lead. As late as a week ago, I think the race tightened up between the decided voters. There was an enormous undecided block in the state, about a third of the voters undecided. And you can see that what ended up happening is that race vote for Rick Santorum.
I'm curious, Congresswoman Blackburn, in 2008, I gather you had endorsed Mitt Romney, switched to Fred Thompson, and then re-endorsed Mitt Romney after Fred
Right.
Thompson dropped out. You've not endorsed this time. Why not?
I have been working on a project for the Republican National Committee, working with Reince Priebus and chairing our Eagles program, serving as a co-chair for that, and staying out of the primaries, because we're raising money for the eventual nominee, and all of our Republican voters have one goal, and that is to make certain that we beat Barack Obama in November.
Well, let me ask you this. As a Mitt Romney supporter 4 years ago, he seems to be coming in a distant second in your home state. Does he have a problem, do you think, connecting with voters typical of your state and throughout the South, which has a lot of evangelical voters, for starters?
I wouldn't say that there is a problem. I think what you have taking place is so many different personalities in the primary election field. One of the things that has served us well in the Republican primary is that there is a deep bench. There are different approaches, but everyone agrees that the goal is to have a Republican in the White House and that there will only be one term served by Barack Obama as president of the United States.
Here's the trouble with that narrative, though, Congresswoman, that as this primary campaign has gone on and on, the negative ratings for all of the candidates have increased. They're becoming less and less popular as this has continued. So do you think that leaves the candidates, ultimately the nominee, damaged going into the general?
I would have chosen different words and a different tactic. I don't like the personal attacks that you have seen, but bear this in mind. As people have gone through the vetting process and have moved from one candidate to another or have liked different issues that different candidates have covered, what you have seen is that fluidity in the race. You are going to see people coalesce around one candidate. You're going to see the party unite. You're going to see a concerted effort as we move forward in the fall. And I think that by the time we get to November, the focus is going to be on freedom, free markets, free people. And the objective is going to be to have a Republican as the winner when we have the November elections.
Okay. Congressman Blackburn, thanks for being with us.
Good to be with you.
That's Congressman Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee, where Rick Santorum is the projected winner in today's primary.
And the Associated Press is also projecting Rick Santorum the winner in the Republican primary in Oklahoma. So Tennessee and Oklahoma, according to the AP, in the Santorum column, and still a very close race in Ohio. Speaking of Oklahoma, we're joined on the line by J.C. Watts, former Oklahoma congressman. He served 4 terms. He was in the class of 94, and he is a supporter of the leader of that class that led it to victory, Newt Gingrich. Why didn't Newt Gingrich win in Oklahoma?
Well, we felt like, I think if you look back in the Missouri, Colorado, and Minnesota primaries, where Missouri, Colorado, yeah, Minnesota. There are three states that Rick Santorum competed in that no one else did. I do think it gave him momentum and it gave him some stature, and I think it continues to serve him well. We didn't know if we could pull it off in Oklahoma, but we kind of focused on it in the last 5 or 6 days, and looked like we're probably going to finish a strong second there. So we're pleased with that. The way the proportionality of the delegates, the way the delegates are proportioned, I think it's going to continue to be a long primary process.
But Congressman,
it's difficult to get to the 1144 for any of the candidates.
You say it looks difficult for any of them to get 1144. It looks especially difficult among the top three for Newt Gingrich to get there. Does it make sense for him to stay in this through to Tampa? And what would happen there at the convention that could satisfy the former speaker?
Well, I think when you consider that Georgia was a pretty big prize tonight, and if the speaker can get, he was about 49% probably 10 minutes ago. All the tally hadn't been concluded there, but he could end up getting 76 delegates if he can get 50% or more. We still, this is, had Newt gotten out when, the conventional wisdom crowd thought he should have gotten out, he would have been dead in Iowa, but he has clearly come back. I think he's, gotten a little bit of energy, and I think when you look at the delegate count right now, based on where all the candidates are, I think where they will be tomorrow morning, I think you're going to see he's still probably right in the middle of the pack.
But, Congressman, watch this. One brief question. Is it fair to say that Newt Gingrich has to be a credible candidate, he has to win something outside the South pretty soon?
Well, where has Santorum won outside of the South, where he had a competitive race, where he had competition?
So Iowa, I guess. Iowa, I think.
But Iowa was, that's the one place.
And he may have win in Ohio.
Or you say Midwest or South, and Ohio had men call. But, as I said, Robert, the score is 1,144, and the delegates are going to continue to be proportioned, and you've got about seven or eight more winner-take-all states, and even if Newt or Santorum or Romney, either one wins all eight, they still are in a pretty tough position mathematically, and they're well short of the 1144. I think you could make the argument, that Santorum maybe should concede, or Romney, considering all the money he spent, and the conventional wisdom said he's going to be the winner, and he still is struggling after spending 6 years and $200 million trying to become the nominee.
J.C. Watts, good to hear from you.
Robert, good to see you, buddy.
That's
Thanks.
Former Oklahoma Congressman J.C. Watts.
And we are awaiting a speech from Rick Santorum to his supporters in Steubenville, Ohio. We'll bring you that when he begins talking there. But we're going first to E.J. Dionne and Matthew Continetti. E.J. Dionne with The Washington Post, Matthew Continetti with The Washington Free Beacon. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Curious for your thoughts as you listen to J.C. Watts there talking about the path forward for Newt Gingrich. Would you say, and we were talking about this with Mara earlier, is it time after Super Tuesday and looking at these results for any one of these candidates to drop out?
If they can keep their super PAC guys putting up a lot of money, they can keep going. And, it depends a lot on what happens in Ohio tonight. But for the first time, I'm conceiving of a situation where you could end up with no one having a majority at the end of this process. If you look at how cut up the vote is tonight, we've already got Oklahoma and Tennessee going to Santorum. You got Massachusetts, Virginia, Vermont going to Romney. You could have a big split tonight. And if Santorum and Gingrich can keep going, they can probably do very well in the South. When we have a sec, I'd love to talk about some religious factors going on today. And so you might just have a shot of nobody ending up with a majority at the end of it.
Well, let me ask Matt first before we get to your thoughts on the other, EJ. Matt Connelly, do you see that scenario plausibly, or really are we talking about an inevitable march by Mitt Romney to the nomination and the rest is just talk?
No, I think we are seeing some striking geographical differences among the different candidates. And when we just mentioned with Congressman Watts, that Santorum's appeal seems to be in the Midwest, Gingrich's appeal is in the South, Romney's appeal is in the Northeast, and then some other pockets of the country where he has biographical ties or large Mormon populations. And so I think EJ is good to come onto the Weekly Standard bandwagon of a brokered convention. And I just heard today that Sarah Palin told CNN that she would throw her name into the ring if such circumstances arise. So I'm excited.
We'll have to find someone who covered the 1952 Republican convention, I guess.
And you
the last person who remembers a convention like that.
And remember that I covered that.
EJ, I'm going to stop you there because Rick Santorum is about to address his supporters there in Steubenville, Ohio.
Let's
go to him now.
Well, thank you for coming out, Steubenville, Ohio. God bless you. Thank you for being here. For the folks listening at home, we're in Steubenville, Ohio. Not too many presidential candidates come to Steubenville, Ohio, much less hold their victory party here in Steubenville, Ohio. We're in a high school gymnasium. I just came from our war room, which doubles as the weight room for the high school. Was pumping a little iron to get myself psyched for coming out here. And we just prepared our talk where many talks were prepared for this gym floor in the coach's room. This is our roots. You stand here behind me is, well, a part of our family. Because this is where we're from. We're from down here in the areas of southeastern Ohio, West Virginia, and southwestern Pennsylvania, where the folks who worked hard and built this country lived and worked for many, many decades. I'm particularly excited to be here with my family. When I say my family, I mean not just my family of our immediate family, but my mom, who is right here. That's my mom, Kay, 93. And Karen's mother and father, Ken and Betty Lee, right over there, Garver. Thank you. I got my brother here and his family, and Karen has, well, several. Karen's one of 11 children, so you can imagine brothers, sisters, nieces, nephews. We've got a great crew back here, all behind us, because this campaign is about the towns that have been left behind and the families that made those towns the greatest towns across this country. This was a big night tonight. Lots of states. We're going to win a few. We're going to lose a few. But as it looks right now, we're going to get at least a couple of gold medals and a whole passel full of silver medals. We can add to Iowa, Missouri, Minnesota, Colorado, now Oklahoma and Tennessee. We have won in the West, the Midwest, and the South, and we're ready to win across this country. I want to thank again my wife. I know that, those who have seen her on the campaign trail, that the common refrain is more Karen, less Rick. But I'm working on it. I'm trying to get as good as she is at this political stuff. But she has been an amazing partner for me. And my conscience, my biggest supporter, my most important, my most honest critic, and someone who has kept our family together and continues to do remarkable and incredible things every day for me and all of us. Thank you very much, my love. We have almost all the kids here. We have John, Sarah Maria.
Where are you?
Patrick, Elizabeth, Peter, and Daniel. And they're all wearing buttons for our little Bella. So we got everybody here. We went up against enormous odds, not just here in the state of Ohio where who knows how much we were outspent, but in every state. There wasn't a single state in the list that I just gave you where I spent more money than the people I was able to defeat to win that state. In every case, we overcame the odds. Here in Ohio, still too close to call. But just like the folks here in Steubenville and throughout the Ohio Valley and all the valleys of this country that are the heart and soul of this country, they worked hard and they overcame odds. And that's what we're here to talk about, and that's why we came to Steubenville. That's one of the reasons I'm so proud to have my mom and my father-in-law and mother-in-law up on stage with me. They are part of the greatest generation of America. They preserved liberty by sacrificing immeasurably to keep this country free from despots. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a bit different battle that we're engaged in today, but it's no less a battle for the basic liberties that this country was founded upon. We have a group of people in Washington and in other places around this country who believe that the elites in Washington are the ones who should be making the decisions for all of us. And they have systematically gone and grown the size and scale of government to beyond where it was just unrecognizable. We are running deficits where we're borrowing 40 cents of every dollar. And as you look at all of the young people here, the leaders in Washington are saying to you, on your tab, and you will pay for this the rest of your life. What right does a government have to do that to the next generation? We have people who believe that America's best days are behind us. They believe that it's no longer possible for free enterprise, a free economy, and free people to be able to build strong communities and families and be able to provide for themselves and their neighbors. No, we now need an increasingly powerful federal government to do this for us. The reason that Karen and I ultimately decided to get into this race was because of that issue, and in particular, one issue. I've said it almost every stump speech I've given. If it wasn't for one particular issue that, to me, breaks the camel's back with respect to liberty in this country, and that is the issue of Obamacare. What we will go to in a very short period of time, the next 2 years, a little less than 50% of the people in this country depend on some form of federal payment, some form of government benefit to help provide for them. After Obamacare, it will not be less than 50%. It will be 100%. Now, every single American will be looking to the federal government, not to their neighbor, not to their church, not to their business or to their employer or to the community or nonprofit organization in their community. We'll be looking always to those in charge, to those who now say to you that they are the allocator and creator of rights in America. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the beginning of the end of freedom in America. Once the government has control of your life, then they got you. That's why we decided to step out. As you look, I mean, Karen and I have 7 children, ages 20. Ages 20 to 3, not exactly the best time to be out running for president of the United States. We've given up our jobs. We're living off our savings. Yeah, we're making a little sacrifice for a very, very big goal. And that is replacing this president on November of this year.
Rick Santorum addressing his supporters in Steubenville, Ohio. It's still a very close race in Ohio. They're still counting votes. And Santorum has been making an anti-elitist, anti-declinist, and anti-healthcare speech.
The Republican Party has to nominate somebody who can talk about the broad vision of what America is. As I talk about in every one of my speeches, I talk about how important it is that we remember who we are. Ronald Reagan, in his farewell address to the American people, worried about whether America would remember what made us great, that we are not a great country because we have a great and powerful government. We are a great country because we believe that rights don't come from the government. But as in our founding document, the Declaration of Independence says, our rights come to us from our Creator. The government's job and the Constitution of this country was intended to do one thing, protect those rights so each and every one of you would have the opportunity to build their own life, to take your own path, to create a strong family, strong neighborhood, community, state and country. That's what made America great. We built a great country from the bottom up, and we need people to go up against President Obama and his vision of a top-down government control of not just health care, but of energy and of manufacturing and of financial services and who knows what else is next. But this is a president who believes that he simply is better able to do this than you are, that he will be fairer than you are with your fellow man. Ladies and gentlemen, this is an election about fundamental liberty. And the signature piece of legislation that points this out, where you have economic rights created by the government, and then the government using its heavy hand to force you to buy insurance, to force you to take policies that you don't want, and of course to force you to take coverages that may even violate your faith convictions. In this race, there is only one candidate who can go up on the most important issue of the day and make the case, because I've never been for an individual mandate at a state or federal level. I've never passed a statewide government-run health care system when I was governor because, well, I wasn't governor. But Governor Romney did. And now we find out this week, not only did he pass it in Massachusetts, he advocated for it to be passed in Washington, D.C., in the middle of the debate on health care. It's one thing to defend a mandated, top-down, government-run health care program that you imposed on the people of your state. It's another thing to recommend and encourage the President of the United States to impose the same thing on the American people. And it's another thing yet to go out and tell the American public that you didn't do it. We need a person running against President Obama who is right on the issues and truthful with the American public. This race provides a great opportunity for a great contrast. Big things have to happen in this country to bring us back from the brink of insolvency. Big things have to happen so we can secure our freedom. And as I talked about this morning in front of AIPAC, that we have a president that stands with our allies and defends this country and does not apologize for America around the world. We need a fighter. We need a fighter and someone who learned what America was about by growing up in communities just like this, understanding how America and neighborhoods and families work, and believing in them, understanding they're under a lot of stress and strain right now, much of which is put upon them by the government, understanding that that's the greatness of our country. My mom and my mother-in-law and father-in-law represent here on this stage the greatest generation. And mom's hamming it up a little bit over there, okay. But the greatest generation was the greatest generation not because they had greater character or courage or perseverance than those of us today. The greatest generation was great because when freedom was at stake, they rose to meet the call to defend this country. We are at a time in this country when freedom is at stake, and you are all blessed, as I am, to be here at a time when your country needs you, to be here at a time like the original founders of this country who signed that Declaration of Independence, to be here at a time when freedom was at stake and people were willing to go out and do heroic and courageous things to win that victory. I want to thank all of you here in Ohio for overcoming enormous odds to make this a great night for us here in the Buckeye State. I want to thank in particular up here on stage, Mike and Fran DeWine, for all the help and support and standing up and fighting for me throughout the course of this time. Thank you.
Rick Santorum running ahead in the primary in Ohio. He's up by a few points with more than a third of the vote cast there, thanking Mike DeWine. Earlier, this was a speech in which he attacked elites in Washington. He above all went after the Affordable Care Act. He calls it Obamacare, which he calls the beginning of the end of freedom in America, and ripped into the unnamed former governor of Massachusetts, who had advocated, he says, an individual mandate both in the state and then for the rest of the country. So that's the theme of his address tonight, Marissa.
I was never for the individual mandate, he said, at the state or the federal level, right. and putting forward the argument that I'm the only one who can make that case against Barack Obama. We're joined once again by Matt Continetti and E.J. Dionne here in the studio. Thoughts on the tone of this speech? It didn't sound like a triumphant victory speech to me. Matt, what do you think?
No, it did not. But at the same time, it didn't veer off into a kind of rhetorical cul-de-sacs as we've seen Rick Santorum do in the last few weeks. I mean, what this speech showed me is that, you know, at the end of the day, Santorum's a more natural politician than Mitt Romney. He has an ease about himself on the stump. And that also kind of sometimes leads him to make flaky comments, though, of course, Romney's not immune from that either. The question is, I think he's finally seized on an issue with which to hammer Romney, and that is the issue of health care. And if he wins Ohio tonight, as he very well might, so he'll have momentum, he'll have an issue, and maybe he can prolong this race even further.
And last we checked, Rick Santorum was ahead in Ohio by, what, about 13,000 votes, something coming up on 40% of the votes counted. E.J. Dionne, what do you think?
I think it was the most politically effective speech he's given since he accepted his what turned out to be his victory in Iowa, because he really honed in on Obamacare, as Tim Pawlenty called it once. And I think the fact that this old USA Today op-ed piece, which somehow had never surfaced until this week, where Romney, who is flatly denied ever advocating a mandate for the nation, specifically advocated a mandate for the nation, I think makes Romney vulnerable. Santorum gets that. He also played the class card very hard, and it's clear that in Republican primaries, Romney is the upscale candidate. He said this campaign is about the towns that have been left behind. He bashed the elites in Washington, mm-hmm. which he's done before. I think it's the beginning of a campaign which, if he had waged this campaign mm-hmm. the week before Michigan, he might have won Michigan.
And we should mention we're awaiting remarks right. from Mitt Romney at his headquarters in Boston. We'll bring those to you momentarily. Robert?
We should just point out first that in the USA Today op-ed from 2009, Mitt Romney did not explicitly use the word mandate. That's my theory, that since the current standard of research is the Google search, you wouldn't have found that. It wouldn't have popped up if you plugged the word mandate into it. Maybe one reason why it wasn't. Matt Continetti, you said this shows that Rick Santorum might be able to prolong the race. Win the race, too?
Anything's possible, and you know, I put myself out of the business of making predictions a long time ago. But no, I think Santorum always had an effective argument to make, and he certainly appeals to what has become the core of the Republican Party, which is working class whites. And using that with springing from a potential Ohio victory, sure, he has a shot.
You think that if Santorum manages to win Tennessee, Oklahoma, and Ohio, if he comes out on top of Ohio,
does
that shatter
him,
the electability argument?
Well, you see him. We actually had a poll out last week, a Gallup in the swing states that USA Today published, showing that Santorum and Romney in those states were basically as competitive as each other against Obama. So that electability argument, I think, has always been overrated in Romney's favor.
EJ?
I think that Romney runs better among upscale voters against Obama, but Santorum has a better shot of running better among working class, lower middle class voters than Romney does. So I do think that's a wash. There is clearly a religious issue going on tonight. I was struck, a tale of two states, Tennessee and Ohio. The pollsters asked, are the religious beliefs of the candidate important to you, matter to you? Those who said religious beliefs matter a great deal voted for Santorum 51-17% in Tennessee and 52-21% in Ohio. The advantage for Santorum in Tennessee is almost twice as many voters in Tennessee said the religious beliefs mattered a great deal. I think what we're seeing there is obviously Rick Santorum's religious appeal in general, and some hints that Mormonism may hurt Romney among some voters, particularly very religious evangelicals.
We're waiting for Mitt Romney again to speak to his, his supporters in Boston. Curious if you were to think about what he needs to convey in his speech tonight, assuming he does not win Ohio, which we don't know yet. He has won Massachusetts, Vermont, and Virginia tonight, the state where only Ron Paul was on the ballot against him. How do you turn that into a "this was a great night for Mitt Romney"?
Well, it might be hard, but I think, you know, what we see there is an opportunity for Romney to broaden the argument. And it's getting to the point now where the economy may not be enough to make a case against Obama. And what we see with Obamacare is that it continues to be unpopular, and there continue to be a large support for its repeal. Santorum clearly sees those polls. He's making it an issue. If Romney can do the same, it would be tough, but that would also give him an issue in addition to this "I'm Mr. Fix-It".
EJ?
Yeah, I think that Romney, first of all, he needs to start looking more natural, and he's got to give some sense that doesn't look artificial that he understands what people who aren't well off in the country are going through. And he's trying to do that in ways that have been that just haven't worked. It may be that he's not of working people, but he is the guy who can improve their lives in substantial ways. He's never really made that case. He's only made a case at some general level that he can fix the economy. If he loses Ohio, we will say that hasn't been enough yet.
As we're waiting for Mitt Romney to address his supporters in Massachusetts, I want to put a question to Mara Liasson, who's with us. Mara, in primary races, candidates of the same party get nasty with each other. They go negative against one another. Is this one really unusually negative? Is it going to be any harder for these people all to stand on the same platform at the convention and support one another come September?
Well, as far as whether it's worse than anything in the past, whenever you say this is the worst ever, somebody will always pipe up and say, "Whoa, you should have seen Thomas Jefferson." Or, you know.
No, I mean in recent
but
in recent years.
History, I would say that this might have been a little bit nastier than certainly the Democratic primary that we saw in 2008. However, I think the other way to measure this is look at the cost that these candidates have incurred because they've run a negative primary. All of their favorable ratings have dropped. Mitt Romney's have dropped considerably among independents. So that's a real that's the cost of being so negative. There also have been studies now done of the advertisements, particularly that Romney and his super PAC have run, and the overwhelming majority of them are negative. But I do think the getting back to the positive versus the negative vision, Romney has lashed himself to a pessimistic view of the economy. Mm-hmm. And we're told it's kind of an article of faith in American politics that the optimist always wins. So if he's going to kind of put all his chips on the economy doing poorly and then it starts doing better, does he have to be out there talking down the economy in order to make his argument? That's why he needs more of a reform agenda, a positive agenda, explanation, as EJ just said, about why what he's proposing is actually going to help individual middle-class people. He talks a lot about the middle class, but it still sounds like a PowerPoint presentation, and it sounds abstract.
And since the primary season began, there have been improved economic indicators. The unemployment rate is a bit down. People on Wall Street are awaiting very anxiously the Friday numbers to see if they stay down or if they rise, but there are some signs on the markets and in investment that that the economy is on the mend. We are waiting right now. Actually, Ann Romney is speaking to the Romney camp up in Boston, and as soon as the former governor speaks, we'll listen to what he has to say. We already heard from Rick Santorum not too long ago, and it seemed to be a speech that summed up his case against above all affordable health care, against declinist thinking, and against elitist thinking. Those ideas seem to, in the Santorum view, EJ, to capture both Barack Obama and, in the Santorum view, and Mitt Romney together. These are sentiments in which, in the Santorum view, you could attach those accusations to both of them.
Right. And I think that Romney is at a disadvantage among a lot of conservatives because he is from my dear home state of Massachusetts, which is not exactly associated with conservatism in the minds of most Republicans. One of the most striking things I have heard from a voter was in Hampshire at a Gingrich rally. And I asked the gentleman, "Why are you for Gingrich?" And he said, "Because Mitt Romney reminds me of John Kerry." If Romney does not make it, that's the line that's going to stick with me for the whole campaign, because because clearly among Republicans that is not a compliment.
Curious, Mara, you were talking about the message that Mitt Romney needs to convey, and I would assume the same message would apply, the same theme would apply to Rick Santorum if he's trying to connect to voters.
Rick Santorum has found a way to connect to voters. He might not be connecting to enough of them for a variety of reasons, but he has tied his personal story to the message that he's now conveying about the economy and about manufacturing and about healthcare. And
hold that thought, Mara, because Mitt Romney is about to address his supporters in Boston.
Thank you. Wow. What a... She is the best. And that was my son, Tag, with her, and his wife, Jen, and their children, Allie and Joe and Thomas. Great to have my family here to be back in our home of Massachusetts. It's wonderful to be able to go home tonight for the first time in 2 months. And What a great night. There are three states now tonight under our belt and counting. We're going to get more before this night is over. We're on our way. We're so excited to be in the Bay State tonight, celebrating with family and with friends who worked just tirelessly on this campaign. And of course, it's such an honor to have the citizens that I served as governor as part of our cause. Your support really means everything to Ann and me, and I'm not going to let you down. I'm going to get this nomination. Tonight, we're doing some counting. We're counting up the delegates for the convention, and it looks good. And we're counting down the days until November, and that looks even better. We're going to take your vote, a huge vote tonight in Massachusetts, and take that victory all the way to the White House. Now it's been a long road getting to Super Tuesday. Let me be honest, and my opponents have worked very hard. I want to congratulate Newt Gingrich on a good night in Georgia and Rick Santorum on his good night and Ron Paul for his steadfast commitment to our Constitution and his strong support almost everywhere you go. He's got good followers. Thanks, you guys. Nice races. Now, we officially started our campaign about 9 months ago, not very far from here at a farmhouse in New Hampshire. It was a beautiful spring day full of hope and promise, a day that made us all recognize once again how lucky we are to be Americans. What we launched that day was an effort not just to win more votes or more delegates. It was the start of an effort to restore the promise of America, a promise that we know has been frayed by these difficult times. We've sounded our clarion call across the country, from airport, tarmacs, to factory floors, to door-to-door, heart-to-heart, face-to-face across the country. I met with moms and dads and teachers and students and factory workers and business owners. I've listened and I've learned. I hope I'm a better candidate, by the way, for having done all that. And I'm going to forever be grateful to you for the help that you've given me and grateful also to all those people who helped me through this process and taught me along the way. I met some extraordinary folks. I met someone named Norm Byrne, who for me exemplifies the innovative spirit that really built the country. Norm didn't go to college, didn't get an engineering degree, but he does have 100 patents in his name. And he turned a small shop in his basement into a very successful company that employs a lot of people. It's entrepreneurs like Norm Byrne who are going to get America's economy back on track if we can get the government out of the way. Yeah. I've met parents like David MacArthur. Maybe you saw him on the Huckabee Show, whose children, in his case, have served their country in war. David's son was seriously injured in Afghanistan, as he described. He only returned from the front lines to face a new fight, to get the medical care he needed, and he surely has earned. And as I told David, I believe that to those who put everything on the line for us, we owe everything to them that they need. You know, America's veterans, they deserve a lot better than long lines and reduced benefits. And as president, I'm going to make sure they get the care they deserve. So in running for office, I've had the chance of meeting people like Norm and David, and their stories are, of course, inspiring. But I've also met some people who are hurting under this stagnant Obama economy, and their stories are heartbreaking. Some people have lost their jobs. Others are working two jobs just to make ends meet. Some used to be middle income, and now they're struggling again right back where they started. As you know, the prices for gasoline and food and clothing and health care keep going up, but their paychecks stay the same if they're lucky. President Obama keeps telling these Americans that the recovery is here. But for them, the recession is not over, that's for sure. You know, from generation to generation in this country, Americans have always known that the future would be brighter and better. We've always believed in a tomorrow full of possibility and prosperity and security. That deep confidence in a better tomorrow is the basic promise of America. But today that promise is being threatened by a faltering economy and a failed presidency. To the millions of Americans who look around and can only see jobs they can't get and bills that they can't pay, I have a message. You have not failed. You have a president that's failed you, and that's going to change. President Obama. You know, when he was campaigning, President Obama said he'd create jobs. But for 36 straight months, unemployment has been above 8%. And he's also said he'd cut the deficit in half. And he's doubled it. I mean, as you know, the debts today are too high. The opportunities are too few. And we've seen enough of this president over the last 3 years to know that we don't need another five of this president. That's for sure. Look, I've said... This president's run out of ideas. He's run out of excuses. And in 2012, we're going to get him out of the White House. Now, President Obama seems to believe he's unchecked by the Constitution. He's unresponsive to the will of our people. He operates by command instead of by consensus. In a second term, he'd be unrestrained by the demands of reelection. And if there's one thing we cannot afford, it's 4 years of Barack Obama with no one to answer to. So these days, you hear the president and his team, they keep telling us that things are getting better. But 24 million Americans are still struggling for work. They're high-fiving each other in the West Wing. But my friends, the truth is, 8% unemployment is not the best America can do. It's just the best that this administration can do. Look, when I'm president, this American economy will not be lagging behind. This American economy will be leading the world as it has and as it should and as it will do in the future.
And as the crowd chants, Mitt, 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 we're listening to Mitt Romney speak to his supporters in Boston, an economic message pledging to restore the promise of America.
For this administration, the unemployment number is just another inconvenient statistic standing in the way of a second term. But those numbers are more than data on a spreadsheet. They're worried families and anxious faces. And tonight, I'd like to say to each of them, you are not forgotten. We will not leave you behind. Our campaign is on the move, and real change is finally on the way. Yeah! These times may be tough, but our citizens still believe in the promise of America, and they deserve a president who believes in them. That's why our campaign is about more than just replacing a president. It's about restoring America's promise, and we will do it. We won't settle. We won't settle for this president's new normal. I'm offering a real choice and a new beginning. I have a plan that'll deliver more jobs, less debt, and smaller government. President Obama raised the national debt. I will cut, cap, and balance the budget. Finally. He passed Obamacare. I will repeal Obamacare. He lost our AAA credit rating. I will restore our AAA credit rating. Amazingly, he rejected the Keystone Pipeline. I will approve it. You know, he has stalled domestic energy production. I'm going to open up our lands for development so we can finally get the energy we need at a price we can afford. Look, when it comes to the economy, when it comes to this economy, my highest priority will be worrying about your job, not worrying about saving my job. And by the way, I've got a pro-growth tax plan, jobs plan, that's going to jumpstart the economy. President Obama wants to raise your taxes. I'm going to cut them. That starts with an across-the-board 20% rate cut for every American. And by the way, I'm also going to repeal the alternative minimum tax, and I will finally abolish the death tax. The president has proposed raising taxes for job creators. I will cut taxes for job creators. The president wants to raise taxes on savings and investment. I will help middle-class families save and invest tax-free. You know, it's interesting. After 3 years, this president does not have a single serious proposal for saving Medicare or Social Security. I have a plan that saves both of them, and I have the courage to put that plan on the table, and we'll win with the truth. As president, I will get our economy back on track and get our citizens back to work. And unlike President Obama, I actually have the experience to deliver on that promise. As you know, I spent 25 years in business. I've been the steward of an Olympics and the leader of this great state that we're all in tonight. I've cut taxes 19 times here. I turned a budget shortfall into a surplus. I know how government kills jobs, and yes, I know how it can help create jobs. I stand ready to lead our party, and I stand ready to lead our nation to prosperity. I've said this before, and I've said it again. I'm going to say it again. This campaign is not just about a name on a ballot. It's about saving the soul of America. And it's driven by an unshakable optimism that lies within the heart of every American citizen. We know that our future is brighter and better than these troubled times. We've been knocked down. We've been tested. But we don't accept that an America like this nation has limits. We know America is a land of opportunity. We still get up every morning and thank God that we're Americans. Yeah. And we also know that with hard work and with strong leadership, with a president that'll tell the truth, with a president that'll live with integrity, that our greatest days as a nation are ahead of us, thanks to the American people. And tonight, we've taken one more step towards restoring the promise of tomorrow. Tomorrow we wake up and we start again. And the next day, we'll do the same. And so we'll go day by day, step by step, door by door, heart to heart. There'll be good days, there'll be bad days. Always long hours, never enough time to get everything done. But on November 6th, It's time to believe in ourselves. It's time to believe in ourselves. It's time to believe in America. And I'm asking you to join our cause. We need your energy and your conviction and your commitment. I'm asking for you to pledge your support at MittRomney.com. Get online. We need your voice and your vote in this campaign. And I'm asking you to join in the fight for our freedom and ensure that tomorrow will be better than today. Let's go forward together and restore the promise of America. Together, let's fight for the America we love. Thank you, and God bless this great land. God bless the United States of America. Thanks, you guys.
Mitt Romney in Boston addressing his supporters on this Super Tuesday. The former Massachusetts governor carried his home state, Massachusetts.
Handily.
Also Vermont, also Virginia, where the only other candidate who got on the ballot was Ron Paul. But what we're really waiting on still is the result from Ohio, where the result remains very close. The race remains very close between Romney and Rick Santorum. The speech from Romney, Melissa?
Strong economic message. Interesting the balance, I think, between what he's talking about, the promise of tomorrow, trying to sound a bit optimistic about what's to come, and yet casting a dark shadow on the state of America now. Interesting to me, Matt Continetti, that he talked about telling American voters, you have not failed, you have a president that has failed you, which seemed to be an interesting little psychological device to use on the voting public.
It's a new line that I'm sure we'll hear more of on this during the course of the campaign. What struck me about the speech, Romney minimized his biography, which has usually been the focal point of his campaign. He didn't sing America the Beautiful, so he had much more specific policy recommendations, which I was cheered by. And then there was some stories in the beginning talking about individual voters he's met on the trail. It was kind of Mitt Romney trying to emote, which we also see with the fact that his wife, Anne, who I think is a great campaign asset, was the one who introduced him this evening. So I thought it was a pretty strong speech. And now he's closing, according to the raw vote totals from Ohio. He seems to be closing that gap. So it may end up being a great night for Mitt Romney after all.
EJ, we heard Mitt Romney at the end there talking about going heart to heart. I mean, it does seem like he's making a very concerted effort to seem more human, more empathetic on the trail.
He was trying to do that, and he did talk about the people who are unemployed and said you were not forgotten. But on the whole, this did not strike me as a terribly different speech. There were a lot of standard stump lines, lines that you could have heard on any night in any campaign, you know, ensure that tomorrow will be better than today. It didn't strike me that he is making any adjustments at all. In fact, it sounded like a speech written on the assumption that he would probably be doing a little better at this hour than he is now. As Matt says, Ohio is still in play. He's down by about 11,000 votes, but closing a little bit. And he began by talking about his opponents and said, thanks, you guys. Nice races. It sounded like he desperately wants to send them off, but it doesn't look like they're going anywhere.
And it seemed, Mara, let's bring Mara Eliason, our national political correspondent, in here, because, Mara, I think that was the only reference he made to the other candidates. It was very much a speech directed at President Obama. We did hear Rick Santorum directly, without naming him, taking on Mitt Romney, still engaged in this as a primary campaign in a way that Mitt Romney seems to be trying to rise above.
Right, and I think that that's where Romney thinks he's going to be able to direct his attention now. His real rival is Barack Obama. If he doesn't feel like he has to spend all of his time trying to fend off the latest anti-Romney candidate, then he can turn his attention to the general election. That's how he started this race, until he had to deal with one challenger after another. But it makes perfect sense that Santorum should be focusing on Romney and Romney should be focusing on Barack Obama. Depending on how tonight turns out, Romney might have a pretty free hand to do that.
But still, looking at the results from Ohio, this doesn't look like a sure thing for him at all, does it? I mean, we're looking at, what, about 60, 70% of the vote counted last I checked, and Rick Santorum has been holding on to a 10, 11,000, 12,000 vote lead for some time now.
But the question is, if Santorum wins the popular vote and there's a split delegate verdict, will that give him any momentum? We haven't seen any momentum yet in this race, and I think it might not.
Okay. NPR's national political correspondent Mara Liasson, thanks to you, and also thanks to E.J. Dionne and to Matt Continetti. Thanks for being with us on Super Tuesday.
Thank you.
This is special coverage of Super Tuesday from NPR News.
From NPR News, this is special coverage of Super Tuesday. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. One by one, the Republican presidential candidates are coming out to address their supporters. Earlier in the evening, Ron Paul spoke in Fargo, North Dakota. He has yet to win any of today's contests. In his speech, he set himself apart from the other candidates.
Liberty will bring people together. There will. Today, we're very divisive because all they're doing is fighting over power. Who's going to control the money? Which faction is going to control it? They all support the same foreign policy, the same monetary policy, the welfare system, the deficits, the whole mess. And they fight over the control and the power and who's going to get the benefits. But true liberty brings us together because people get to use the liberty the way they see fit.
Newt Gingrich spoke in Atlanta, Georgia, Georgia being his home state and the one state he has won, according to Associated Press projections. He talked about the tenor of his campaign.
We didn't spend our time on lots and lots of negative ads. We spent our time communicating hope to the American people.
Gingrich also referred to himself as the tortoise, suggesting that slow and steady wins the race.
And we heard from Rick Santorum tonight in Steubenville, Ohio. The race in Ohio is the most closely watched tonight, and it continues to be too close to call. Santorum has a very narrow lead over Mitt Romney as the votes continue to be counted. But the AP has projected wins for Santorum in both Tennessee and Oklahoma. And in his speech in Ohio, he tallied his victories throughout the election season.
We have won in the West, the Midwest, and the South, and we're ready to win across this country.
And last but not least, Mitt Romney has the most notches on his Super Tuesday stick so far. Three states. The AP projects him as the winner in Virginia, Vermont, and Massachusetts. Romney's in Boston tonight, and before an enthusiastic crowd, he once again laid out his criticisms of President Obama.
To the millions of Americans who look around and can only see jobs they can't get, and bills that they can't pay, I have a message. You have not failed. You have a president that's failed you, and that's going to change.
Mitt Romney in Boston. We're going to bring together three of our reporters right now. Don Gagne, who is at Santorum headquarters in Steubenville, Ohio. You there?
I am here, yes.
Ari Shapiro at Romney headquarters in Massachusetts.
Hi, Robert.
And Tamara Keith at Columbus, Ohio.
I'm here.
Well, let's hear, first of all, from the Romney camp. Mitt Romney spoke last. Ari, is the sense there that this has been the big night, the Super Tuesday they were looking for? Or
not at all. Listen, I'll tell you, a few hours before all of the results started coming in, we got advanced excerpts of the remarks that Mitt Romney was planning to deliver this evening. And he delivered those remarks without any change after the results had come in. This is not reflecting a man who has finally eliminated the competition and proven that he is the front runner that he always believed himself to be. This is a speech from a man who is still fighting off these rivals, nipping at his heels, still trying to stay focused on President Obama, but having a hard time doing it when he's losing states he had hoped to win, and there are no results in states where he outspent his rivals 4-1.
And Ari, I'm curious, that line that we just heard from Mitt Romney, you have not failed, you have a president that has failed you, is that a new line for him, or you heard that before?
No, that specifically is a new line. But you know what it reminded me of was a week ago somebody asked whether he was disappointed in the way his campaign had performed, and he said, I'm very pleased with my campaign. They have a candidate who sometimes makes mistakes.
Well, let's turn now to Santorum headquarters and NPR's Don Gagne. In his speech tonight, Rick Santorum really went after the Affordable Health Care Act and also anybody who has ever supported an individual mandate on a state or a national level, meaning you know who.
It's a beautiful issue. With one swing, he can take out both the president and his main opponent for the nomination. It gets to them both. On President Obama, he says they want to take over your lives and take away your liberties, and this is the first step. With Governor Romney, anything that Romney did in Massachusetts that led to this bill winding up on his desk and getting his signature is something to be condemned for at this point. It was a very defiant speech.
He spoke of what he calls Obamacare as the beginning of the end of freedom in America. When you're on the campaign, when you're talking to voters, does that resonate with them? I mean,
it sure does. It sure does. In fact, people at Santorum rallies talk about that more than they talk about the state of the economy. I mean, they see that as the main issue, just as the candidate says it is. Certainly, a lot of them, speak to his Christian faith and his Catholicism and the family values that he talks about. But more often than not, especially in this crowd tonight, people said that is the issue, and he's the only one who can take on the president.
And let's bring Tamara Keith in. She's in Columbus, Ohio. Tamara, you've been talking to voters there. Any different message you're hearing in that part of the state than what Don's hearing in Steubenville?
I'm hearing a lot about the economy. I talked to a lot of voters, and every person I said, what are the main issues for you? The first word out of their mouths was all the economy, which is kind of fascinating because, in fact, the economy here in Ohio is outperforming the national economy. The unemployment rate here is lower than the national average, and Ohio began recovering before the nation as a whole. But folks here say, it's just not back anywhere close to where it was. They're very concerned about the economy here and in the nation as a whole.
And we should mention, with about 64% of the votes counted in Ohio, about a 2 percentage point difference with Rick Santorum slightly ahead of Mitt Romney, Robert?
Yeah, well, that with almost two-thirds of the vote counted, of course, one could still eclipse that 2,000 voter, 2%. It's more than 2,000 votes.
It was about 10,000 votes, I think. Yeah,
but it's a lead, and it's held up for quite a while.
With Rick Santorum on top at this point. Thanks to the three of our reporters, NPR's Ari Shapiro at Romney headquarters in Boston, Don Gagne at Santorum headquarters in Steubenville, Ohio, and NPR's Tamara Keith in Columbus, Ohio.
And here in the studio with us, Michael Dimmick, who is Associate Director of the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press. Michael, you've been looking at the exit polls. First of all, is there anything in there that's especially different from exit polls that we've seen on other Tuesday nights this year?
Not particularly different, although what you saw was a couple of states that had a very different profile in Tennessee and Oklahoma in terms of the conservatism on social issues. The white evangelical figures are very high, 73% in Tennessee, 68% in Oklahoma. And also that these economic voters that we were just hearing about, folks who prioritized that, had been going to Romney in most states. But in these states, they didn't clearly. They split their vote between Santorum and Romney in Oklahoma and Tennessee, and favored Gingrich in Georgia. So that economic theme didn't play as strongly for Romney as it has in some other states.
Or it played with different voters in any case.
Right.
And in terms of income levels, once again, we saw Rick Santorum appealing very well to those with lower incomes, Mitt Romney with higher incomes.
Right. I think this class divide in the GOP is fascinating to see. It's really been a clear pattern. It almost feels like it's getting stronger and stronger as we go. And again, in these states where Romney doesn't do as well, Tennessee, Oklahoma, Georgia, he's losing by big margins among these low-income voters.
Michael, it's interesting to think about that in the earlier primaries and caucuses, the debates were hugely important. There were so many of them, and recently we really haven't had any at all. I don't know whether that's anything that shows up in the exit polls in terms of how people made up their mind.
Yeah, they didn't ask about the debates. I think since they're largely over, the polls this time asked more about gas prices. They were curious as to whether that was a big factor in people's votes. To be sure, the vast majority said it was important to them, but very few said it was the issue shaping their vote. I think the broader economic issues and the deficit are still predominant.
And evangelical voters, which are such a key voting block, especially in primaries and caucuses, what are you seeing there? What are the patterns?
Well, the evangelicals broke strongly for Santorum, and we've seen that in other states prior to this. Georgia is the exception here again because Gingrich just did so well among almost all groups there.
And once again, the question that's always asked of voters in these exit polls is what drove your vote? What was your biggest concern? And typically, it's been electability.
Right.
It's more so. It's still not. Do you agree with this candidate down the line on more issues, but do you think he's more likely to be able to beat President Obama? And change there?
Not a big change, but a little bit lower. I mean, again, in some of these more southern states, that wasn't as predominant of an issue. So while Mitt Romney continues to win those electability voters in most of these states, again, Georgia's the exception where Gingrich did very well, it wasn't as big a proportion. And then the states coming up are some more southern states later this month.
One other group I would ask you about, young voters.
The young voters are where Romney has a real difficulty. He hasn't been winning them in very many of these states. They broke against him again. Voters who are 65 and older have been voting very consistently for Mitt Romney. The younger voters, not only do they support Ron Paul much more, but are also offering more support to Rick Santorum.
Michael Dimmick, thanks so much. Michael Dimmick with the Pew Research Center. And we're joined to wrap up our coverage of Super Tuesday by NPR's senior Washington editor, Ron Elving. And Ron, let's recap where we are. There's still no result, no final result out of Ohio, but we've seen a fairly consistent Rick Santorum lead. Last I checked, it was about 14,000 votes in that state. What do you see?
The only, if you will, caution to that at this point, since Rick Santorum has led throughout the night, is that some of this vote that we're seeing come in is unbalanced from a geographical standpoint, and that may suggest other differences between the voters. For example, we have not seen as many votes as we would expect coming in from Canton and Dayton and Cleveland and Toledo, and these are places where you might surmise Mitt Romney might do a little better, and that in the smaller towns that were so celebrated by Rick Santorum in his speech earlier in Steubenville, Ohio, when he was talking about the little towns and the people in the valleys and so on, identifying with them, identifying with their American experience. You would think that if the cities were weighing in a little later, that might be good news for Mitt Romney. But we really don't know that. And I think, though, the question of some of those more urban areas is what's keeping this vote open at this point. No one's calling it.
And let's recap the other states. Rick Santorum has picked up victories in Oklahoma and Tennessee. Have we called North Dakota?
North Dakota, the caucuses are well along, and it does look as though Santorum has a very clear lead there. I think that one will be projected as a win for him, and indeed some people are calling it that.
Well, let's imagine then for just a moment as we conclude the best case outcome for Rick Santorum. Let's say he holds on to his lead in North Dakota. Let's say he holds on to his lead in Ohio, and he's already won Oklahoma and Tennessee. In that case, the lead on this day is a Super Tuesday for Rick Santorum.
Absolutely. Whoever wins Ohio is going to claim the headline from tonight. Even though Gingrich got a great win in Georgia and won the most delegates there, it just doesn't measure up to the multiple wins for the other candidates, and Ohio is so clearly the key contested place that everyone concentrated on. Whoever wins there will get the headline.
NPR Senior Washington Editor Ron Elving, thanks so much.
Thank you, Robert.
And we wrap up our coverage of Super Tuesday. Again, 10 states voting today, still waiting for results from North Dakota. Also, Idaho and Alaska still later tonight. Robert, we're not sticking around for that, as exciting as it will be. But again, Rick Santorum with victories in Oklahoma, Tennessee. We don't know yet about Ohio. Mitt Romney picking up Massachusetts, Vermont, and Virginia. And Newt Gingrich with his single victory in his home state of Georgia. I'm Melissa Block.
I'm Robert Siegel, and this has been special coverage of Super Tuesday from NPR News.